Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap and Mitchell Radio Program. Today is Saturday, March 4th, 2017, and we are back on the air live for 2 hours every Saturday coming up. I can't tell you how much I've missed being behind the microphone. I miss you guys, but certain things had to take place before we can get back on the air. Those things have happened, and now here we are. So we've got a lot going on today, an action-packed show. If you want to be part of that show, welcome to the Aaron's High Cap and Mitchell Radio Program. Today is Saturday, March 4th, 2017, and we are back on the air live for 2 hours every Saturday coming up. I can't tell you how much I've missed being behind the microphone. I miss you guys, but certain things had to take place before we can get back on the air. Those things have happened, and now here we are. So we've got a lot going on today, an action-packed show. If you want to be part of that show, feel free to give us a call here in the studio at 254-697-6633. We're toll-free at 866-504-1651. It's 1051. That's 866-504-1051. You can send me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website directly, aaronsgunshop.com, and check it out. So we got a lot of things going on here. Now, ladies and gentlemen, since I've been off the air, tons of things have happened. Main thing being the election. Everybody knows about the election and how people are angry, specifically about the immigration part of it. Well, in my last shows, I've done opinion pieces at the beginning of the show, and this show is going to be no different. I'm going to start off the show with my opinion piece. And I was going to start it off with immigration, my opinion on immigration. And as I was writing down my opinion piece, I get angry. I get disturbed and upset. And I'm going to read to you the beginning part of my opinion piece. And then as I was writing it, it just clicked to me why I write like this. Because at my desk, I have something very special that was written by somebody very special. And as I was writing my opinion piece, I reflected upon what was written. And it explained totally to me why I get it. Angry and upset at certain things. So let me start it off by this. I'm going to read to you the beginning part of my opinion piece and then break and read to you what clarifies who I am. My opinion piece was called Common Decency. So ladies and gentlemen, I put on a military uniform and swore an oath to this country that I would defend our way of life and our Constitution from enemies both foreign and domestic. You heard me say that time and time again. Now, do you understand what that means? That means that I and millions of others like me were willing to die to this, so the scumbag who is protesting the flag can maintain that right to do so, or whatever any other scumbag is saying or doing within the confines of the law. But you know what? There's a point when those scumbags cross the line, and that's where I got angry. And then as I looked over on my desk, I saw what was written, and I want to tell you what it is. It's the last will and testament of Captain Henry T. Waskow, or Waskow, however you pronounce it. Forgive me if I say it wrong. He's a local boy from back in World War II. So let me give you an idea of who this gentleman is. Waskow was born in DeWitt County, Texas, the seventh of eight children by children of German immigrants. His parents were cotton farmers and moved around in various places in Texas until settling in Belton, Texas, when Henry was 2 years old. He attended the public schools and graduated from Belton High School in 1935 as president of the student council, receiving top grades and showing a particular aptitude for mathematics. He attended Temple Junior College on a scholarship and taking on custodial duties on campus. During his college years, he enlisted in the Texas Army National Guard in the 143rd Infantry Regiment, part of the 36th Infantry Division, with his two older brothers, John Otto and August Waskow. Following his 2 years in junior college, Waskow was offered a position as a teacher but turned it down to attend Trinity University, which was then in Wachahaskee, Texas. He graduated with a bachelor's degree on June 5th, 1939, and was offered a job at Belton High School. He turned it down, expecting to be called for full-time military duty. Now, that's the preface to it. Let me read to you now his last will and testament, and as I read it, you're going to hear me speaking. December 14th, this is from the Texas Military Forces Museum, December 14th, 2013. I'm going to read it to you. And finally, the last will and testament of Captain Henry T. Waskow. This letter was written while he was still training in the 36th Infantry Division. It was delivered to his sister after his death and first published in 1959. It is a moving tribute to all who choose to serve this country and to those who gave their life in its defense. Here we go. Herewith my last will and testament. Greetings. If you get to read this, I will have died in defense of my country and all that it stands for. The most honorable and distinguished death a man can die. It was not because I was willing to die for my country. However, I wanted to live for it, just as any other person wants to do. It is foolish and foolhardy to want to die for one's country, but to live for it is something else. To live for one's country is, to my mind, to live a life of service. To, in a small way, help a fellow man occasionally along the way and generally be useful and to serve. It also means to rise up in all our wrath and with our overwhelming power to crush any oppressor of human rights. That is our job, all of us, as I write this, and I pray, God, we are wholly successful. Yes, I'd have liked to have lived, to live and share the many blessings and good fortunes that my grandparents bestowed upon me. A fellow never had a better family than mine. But since God has willed it otherwise, do not grieve too much, dear ones, for life in the other world must be beautiful. And I have lived a life that in mind all along. I have lived a life with that in mind all along. I was not afraid to die. You can be assured of that. All along, I prayed that I and others could do our share to keep you safe until we returned. I pray again that you are safe, even though some of us do not return. I made my choice, dear ones. I volunteered in the armed forces because I thought I might be able to help this great country of ours in its hours of darkness and need, the country that means more to me than life itself. If I've done that, then I can rest in peace, for while I've done my share to make the world a better place in which to live. Maybe when the lights go on again all over the world, free people can be happy and gay again, using the terminology of the day. Through good fortune and the grace of God, I was chosen a leader. An honor that meant more to me than any of you will ever know. If I failed as a leader, I pray to God I didn't. It was not because I did not try. God alone knows I've worked and slaved to make myself a worthy leader of these magnificent men, and I feel assured that my work has paid dividends and personal satisfaction, if nothing else. As I said a couple of times in my letters home, when you remember me in your prayers, remember to pray that I be given strength, character, and courage to lead these magnificent Americans. I said that in all sincerity, and I hope I have proved worthy of their faith, trust, and confidence. I guess I have always appeared as pretty much of a queer Gus to all of you. It seems strange at times. It was because I had weighty responsibilities that preyed on my mind and wouldn't let me slack up to be human, like I so wanted to be. I felt so unworthy at times of the great trust my country had put in me that I simply had to be plugging to satisfy my own self that I was worthy of that trust. I have not, at the time of this writing, done that, and I suppose I never will. I do not try to set myself on a pedestal as a martyr. Every Joe Doe who shouldered a rifle made a similar sacrifice, but I do want to point out that the uppermost thought in my mind all along was service to the cause, and I hope you all felt the same way about it. In closing here, when you remember me as a fond admirer of you all, for I thought so much of you and loved you with all my heart. My wish for all of you is that you get along well together and prosper, not in money, but in happiness, for happiness is something that all the money in the world can't buy. Try to live a life of service, to help someone where you are and whatever you may be. Take it from me. You can get happiness out of that, more than anything in life. Henry T. Waskow, Saturday, December 26, 1942. I read that, ladies and gentlemen, because I was writing my opinion piece, and there's a lot of scumbags out there. You can be in disagreement, and I got no problems with it. But when you just disagree in a manner that is so disgraceful with a lack of common decency to those who try to defend your way of life, you irritate me. So you people out there, you irritate me. For all you others, I hope that woke you up to what a person does, a soldier, when they volunteer for service, they put their life on the line to defend a way of life. Look at them, respect them, honor them. Although the politics of the situation not be right, honor and respect our soldiers who go in voluntarily to defend our way of life. Okay? Now, if you don't like that, I don't care. You can call me up at 697-6633. State your opinion. If you do like it, want to make a comment, if you know this guy, if you've been around, if you're old enough to remember this guy, give us a call. Tell us about it. 254-697-6633. Let's tell you what's going on in today's show. We've got a lot going on. Today's highlights. Today's license to carry segment will cover Penal Code 4602, unlawful carrying of a weapon. Now, although this is a short penal code, it has a lot of information in it. So get your note-taking materials ready for that. It's going to be a pretty good segment. As always, I'm going to read to you three true stories of self-defense, usually out of the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column, and give you my commentary on each story. So let's learn from these mistakes and successes of others so that we can be even more ready in case our lives become in danger. I am very excited to announce that after those two segments, I have a special guest on here. Hopefully we can get him on more than just one or two Saturdays, and I'll explain that in that segment. We have attorney Richard Dodd going to be in here talking to us about the Penal Code 4602 and the true stories of self-defense. And now what's really cool after those two segments, like I said, we're going to be talking to him, but I've always said, I'm not an attorney. I can't give you any advice. Well, I'm sitting next to one of the most prominent attorneys you can think of, and we can ask him for maybe some advice. We'll see what he says. So that's going to be a good section. Stay tuned, all you licensed to carry people. In my politics section, I'm going to be bringing up topics ranging from the economy, military defense, foreign policy, etc. But today, it will be about our economy. It's a complex issue, and the more information we can glean from others, the better it will be for our future, okay? Today's topic of interest section will make you aware of upcoming events in the month of March with a brief description on each event. And also, I found some signs and some T-shirts with sayings on them that I thought were pretty cool. So I'm going to read those to you on air as well. Product spotlights. We got a pretty cool one. If you're familiar with the High Point type of guns here, you're going to be surprised as to what they have to offer. But we're going to be talking from ANC Firearms, one of our sponsors there in Heidenhammer. We'll be talking about the High Point 45 AC pistol. Some people love this gun, some people hate it, but everyone loves the price. So get ready to rush out and buy yours from ANC Firearms once the show is over, of course. Or if you're going to go race there right now, make sure you turn on the radio and listen. We have with us again the voice of law enforcement, former Officer of the Year, Randy Dixon. That guy's got an incredible history, incredible background. Hopefully, I can scramble from him his resume just to tell you all the things he's accomplished. He's going to be talking about a plethora of things. He's a walking encyclopedia, so that would be always a great thing to listen to is Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement. In my gun training demo, the age-old question of, does size really matter? Well, that's going to be answered. Does size really matter when it comes to a handgun? Ladies, for sure, you need to pay attention to this one. I've got a special guest coming in who we talked about this topic. I talked to her specifically just last week. We're going to bring her in, and she's going to explain how true it is. Size does make a difference when it comes to a handgun, depending on the size of your hands. Now, as a lot of you already know, I, your host, am a bartender and have a mobile bartending service called Aaron's Nightcaps. Well, for this first show, I'm going to explain the business, the mobile bartending business, perfect for weddings, social events, corporate functions, birthdays, etc. And it's called Aaron's Nightcaps. And to make it easy, just go to aaronsgunshop.com, and it's going to encompass all my other businesses. It's got the bartending business there. It's got the radio show, all the things to do with the gun shop. So go check it out. And finally, for today's interview segment, I'll be talking with David Lee, owner of Southern Cast Bullets. If you need bullets, he's got them, and we're going to talk bullets, ammo, reloading, and more. So buckle up, get ready, and let's put the show into hyperdrive, okay? We're going to hit it first with license to carry. I also want to call it conceal a handgun license because there's a lot of people out there still with their old license. It hasn't been updated to say license to carry. So we're going to say this is CHL, license to carry, but in reality, it is now termed license to carry. Remember, if you want to be part of the show, give us a call here at 254-697-6633. License to carry, Penal Code Section 4602. Unlawful carry of a weapon. Ladies and gentlemen, the law does not care what you think. The law cares about what the law says. When it comes to the law, I don't care what people think, what their opinions are, etc. Misunderstanding the law or thinking you know the law, but in reality don't, can get you into a lot of trouble, legally and financially. Many law enforcement officers don't know the law to its exact meaning. They, however, I will give a little slack to. You and I, as a licensed to carry holder, only have to know a fraction of what the law enforcement officer needs to know. He or she needs to know 100% of the law. But being realistic, I know that's impossible. That is why they carry their little pocket penal code books with them, so they can reference the law if they can't remember it. Now, when on a traffic stop or whatever, even though the officer can reference the law, if they are not sure of it, it can still lead to mistakes. So if you are a licensed to carry holder, you sign an affidavit that you know and understand the laws of Texas when carrying a handgun. If you don't know them, then you are foolish and put yourself in a position of weakness and unwanted influence. Now, even though power can trump knowledge, knowledge is still power. And what I mean by that is, you may be strong in knowledge and be correct in the law, but if the officer is not strong in knowledge, he or she can trump you with the power that they wear on that badge. You must comply with the officer at the time or receive repercussions from your refusal to comply with the officer. Now, I'm going to read to you Penal Code 4602. This is an extremely important penal code because it says so much in such a short penal code. I'm going to read it to you, then break it down with explanation and commentary. And then remember, after our first break, we're going to have Rick Dodd come on. Rick Dodd, and he's going to answer some questions I have concerning that penal code to give us more clarity on it. So now, let me read to you Penal Code 4602. This is unlawful carrying of a weapon. This section does not apply to a person in possession of a valid license and carrying a handgun. Let's clarify that statement right from the top. I have a license. If you don't have a license, this section pertains to you. Subsection A1 and A2. A. A person commits an offense if the person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly carries on or about his or her person a handgun, illegal knife, or club if the person is not 1. On the person's own premises or premises under the person's control, or 2. Inside of or directly en route to a motor vehicle that is owned by the person or under the person's control. A1, a person commits an offense if the person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly carries on or about his or her person a handgun in a motor vehicle or watercraft that is owned by the person or under the person's control at any which time, 1. The handgun is in plain view, unless in a shoulder or belt holster under a license to carry, or 2. The person is A. Engaged in criminal activity other than a Class C misdemeanor that is in a violation of law or ordinance regulating traffic, B. Prohibited by law from possessing a firearm, or C. A member of a criminal street gang as defined by Section 7101. Now, what I'm going to do briefly is give you an idea of what kind of questions we're going to ask, or what areas of this penal code raise questions, so that when we get Attorney Richard Dodd on here, we can ask him directly and we can talk back and forth and get clarity on the subject. But first of all, we're going to be talking about how this section applies to you, not a license holder. We're going to talk about what's intentionally, what's recklessly. What is a person's premise? What's the clarity on premise? Or if you're not on your premise, how are you in control of another person's premise? We'll talk about going to your vehicle. If you don't have a license, you can carry concealed, but we need to talk about that and be very clear about it. Like I said, knowledge is power. But if not everybody understands the knowledge and doesn't know it, you can get yourself in some trouble. So we just want to be clear that we understand what it says. Also, if you don't have a license, you can carry in your vehicle. People say, I can't do that. Well, yes, you can. But there are certain ways that the law states that you can do it. We're going to be talking about that. There's many things. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are licensed to carry, and like I said, you signed an affidavit that you understand, read the law and understand it. This is very important. They will put it in your face if you do something wrong. They'll say, well, you signed an affidavit that you knew and understood, yet you didn't do it. Okay? So you've got to cover your rear end and make sure you understand the law. So those of you who don't have it, we teach classes. I've got a license to carry class coming up on March 11th. That's Saturday at 2 o'clock. It's $60 for all new people. Anybody who has a license to carry already and wants to refresh, I can do that for $40. Give us a call. Check out the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and we can do that. Okay, we're going to hold off on that now. I'm going to go to my three stories of true events. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to have Rick Dodd on here, and we're going to talk shop. All right. In this section, I'm going to read from these Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman, and hopefully from these true stories we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It all depends on the stories. Okay, so here we go. This comes out of the American Rifleman February 2017 issue. First story reads, while it's normal for a deputy to protect the public, it's less normal for an everyday citizen to get a chance to return the favor. But that's what happened in external Florida recently when an armed citizen shot and killed someone who was attacking a law enforcement officer. The deputy and the assailant had been involved in a high-speed car chase on the interstate. After the vehicles came to a stop, the suspect and Deputy Dean Bards, I believe it's pronounced, got out of their respective vehicles. The suspect, who was armed, then started assaulting the law officer. A passerby who had a license to carry a concealed handgun stopped and told the attacker to stop beating up the deputy or he'd shoot. The attacker didn't listen, so the armed citizen fired three times, killing the assailant. The officer was treated and released for his injuries. He was not shot by the armed suspect. Now, my commentary on that. Ladies and gentlemen, police are like military personnel. They all volunteer. That means they are willing to put themselves in a potential danger situation every day to help keep us safe and free. I think all of us should have a mindset and a physical ability to reciprocate that to an officer in need. The armed citizen in this story did that, and I'm sure the officer was grateful. It's extremely important in the times we live in for an officer to have a good rapport with the citizens of where he works and vice versa, so all of us can watch each other's backs and willingly and wantingly come to each other's rescue when needed. Story number two. Getting physically removed from a store after causing trouble there apparently bruised a malcontent's ego enough that he sought revenge. After a clerk forcibly escorted an unruly customer from Sherman, Texas grocery store, the man threatened to return later. He came back as promised, accosting the clerk as he made his way to a car after locking up the store. When the troublemaker pulled something out of his waistband, the clerk ran toward an alley, drawing his weapon as a precaution. The suspect, now with a machete in hand, pursued the store worker, who fired in self-defense, then went back into the store to call the police. The wounded predator ran off but was caught a few minutes later after a nearby resident called for an ambulance because he had collapsed and needed medical aid. Now, my commentary on that one. A. Don't be a jerk. B. Don't tell someone that you're coming back to hurt them. C. Don't accost someone, period. D. Don't bring a machete to a gunfight. E. The clerk deserves a high five. He just got one. Good deal, clerk. Story number three. Being home alone can leave one vulnerable, but a gun can turn the tables. An Indiana woman whose spouse was away was letting her dog out one evening. As she did, a man in a ski mask approached. She told the man to leave, but he didn't heed her warning. The woman ran inside the house with the attacker on her heels. He threw the woman against the wall. The woman pushed him away and got up and retreated to the bedroom. The intruder pursued her and climbed on top of her on the bed as she fought against him. She struggled to grab her husband's gun, kept near the bed, and fired two shots at the assailant. The aggressor fled and the woman escaped serious injury. My commentary. Being home alone can leave one vulnerable. It says it in the very first sentence. So if that's the case, keep a gun on or about your person at all times, unless prohibited by law or work environment. Other than that, not having the gun on her, the woman was strong and determined to defend herself. You know, if this wasn't a real story, I would say it's some type of aggressive foreplay. You know what I'm saying? If you think about the story, he throws her, he runs after her, and all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't. Self-defense, and she did a great job. So anyway, three true stories. I think we can learn something from each one of those stories. Take your notes, make your notes, figure out how your lifestyle is, and apply it to your lifestyle. All right, with that, we're going to take a break. Trey, we're going to take a long break. And when we come back, we are going to have attorney Richard Dodd here, and we're going to talk Penal Code 4602. See you on the other side.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. I'm back in the saddle again, and I'm enjoying every bit of it. Once again, today's Saturday, March 4th, 2017. We're here live at The Ranch, 105.1 FM. If you want to give us a call, you can give us a call here at 254-697-6633. We're toll free at 866-504-1051. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or just go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com. I am very honored and pleased to have sitting next to me right now is attorney Richard Dodd, very prominent attorney here in the area and I'm sure all over. And I'm going to read to you a quick bio of attorney Dodd here to show you all the knowledge that this gentleman has. Richard A. Dodd, personal injury attorney. A Texas super lawyer. He's wearing his cape now. I see it. Member of the Texas Trial Lawyers Association, Texas Bar Foundation, College of the State Bar of Texas, Million Dollar Advocates Forum, and American College of Legal Medicine. He is on the Leaders Forum of the American Association for Justice and belongs to the Products, Professional Negligence, Motor Vehicle, and Toxic Environmental Pharmaceutical sections of the American Association of Justice and to the Birth Trauma Litigation Group, the Medical Negligence Information Exchange Group, and the Brain Injury Association. Don't be checking me out on the brain part now. Members of the State Bar of Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, and Arkansas. He is active in Milam County Bar Association, and you can reach him at 254-697-4965 or 800-460-0606. And with that, sir, Rick, can I call you Rick?
You bet. All that really means is I'm just getting old.
We were talking about what a fellow means, and you were saying it takes a certain amount of time, 10 years, 25 years to become a fellow, and I guess that just shows prominence that you've been in the attorney for that long, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the thing about practicing law is you continue to practice. Someday you get it right.
That doesn't make me feel good. So here if I'm sitting with you in court. Okay. Rick, I got you on because, one, I like you, and two, I think you're going to be just a perfect segment after the first two segments we did because I'm always asking questions and I'm not trying to cause trouble. I'm trying to have clarity. And the clarity is I want everybody to understand this is what it means. But when you understand what it means, we still have to put it in practical application. So when we were reading Penal Code 4602, I got a lot of questions just for clarity's sake. And I sent it to you. Is there anything on top of your head that you want to address when it concerns 4602?
Sure. You made the comment that we really don't care what you think, that you have to know. And that is true up to an extent. There are some phrases within that code that talk about reasonable beliefs. And that's where what you think comes into play.
Now, the reasonable part is from 12 people, six of which are prosecuting attorney's picks, and hopefully the others are yours, and somebody you can flip over there. That's what reasonable means.
I agree. It's a finder of fact. You don't always have to have a jury. Of course, jury is protected by our Constitution, just like the right to carry arms. Mm-hmm. And it's an important part of the Constitution. But you can waive that right, just like you don't have to carry guns all the time.
But no matter what, it comes to the point where a human being is going to make a final decision based on an emotion in most cases if it's in a reasonable aspect of the law.
That's right. And you know, that decision could be different on any given Monday here in Milam County.
That's
that
right.
Decision could be different in Midland than it is in Plano. So
that's why thinking you're right may not always be profitable.
That's right. I mean, the bottom line is, if you don't want to get arrested and taken down to the jail for the night, you need to be thinking that the officer that's talking to you is right, no matter what he is saying.
That's right. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the reason I harp on this on the air and in my classes of clarity, dotting our I's and crossing our T's, is that you can see what the law means and look where those little loopholes are that can get you in trouble. You can't just say, I read this and it means this. Well, there's key words. Punctuation means things and words mean things. So we're going to talk about that right now. Now, Rick, on this penal code, I've got some questions. And where are they? I'm looking for them now. And yes. Okay, I'll just do it off the cuff here. The first thing I wanted to talk about was intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly. It seems obvious, but can you clarify those terms in the law as to what each one would be, being reckless, knowingly, or carelessly?
Well, again, we're talking about a question of fact. And what that means is what is intentional, reckless. And the evidence will show that. And the jury or the judge will determine that question of fact. It's not really written in the law what that means. But for instance, if I said, well, yeah, I intended to do this, that's pretty good evidence.
Pretty good evidence.
I think
right.
That'll nail me down.
But it seems, you know, a lot of times you see people get off for things and you're like, but it's so obvious they did it. And then somehow they just get off of it unless it's recorded video. You saw it. And even when it's recorded, sometimes great attorneys can malign things or change things. So is it truly definite if one says I was being reckless?
Well, you know, when you talk about attorneys, I mean, our job is to take sides. We represent our side. And, you know, if I'm a prosecutor, I'm going to be prosecuting to my very best ability. And if I'm a defense lawyer, I'm going to be doing the same. I'm going to be defending. So when you use the word malign, I mean, I guess that's a good word. But basically, it's a question of interpretation, interpreting the facts. And our job is to interpret those facts and present to the finder of fact, be it a judge or a jury, our side of that story.
And once again, that could change any Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of the day based on their belief of how you described it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, all of us come into the world of jury trials with some prejudice and bias. We all have that, and that's what makes us human beings, is these prejudice and bias. And if I get 12 people on a jury and more than half of them have some sort of bias because of their past experiences against my position, then I've got an uphill climb.
And that's why selecting your jury is so important and so in-depth in the questioning to see if there is any of that bias, right?
Absolutely. A lot of the training that I've had has to do with jury psychology and choosing a jury because of that. I mean, that is very important.
Okay. This next question is pretty important because in the classes, in the law, there's a lot of this word premises. So clarify, please, the definition of a premise. Is it the front yard, backyard, just the house, your property considered premises in general, or is it defined as a building or a portion of a building as used in the laws pertaining to license to carry? That's how we describe it.
Well, yeah, anytime you are looking at a law, the law will say, under this section, premises means. And in 46035, for instance, it says premises means a building or a portion of a building, period. It goes on to say it does not include any public or private driveway, street, sidewalk, or walkway, parking lot, parking garage, or other parking areas. So it would be, in fact, a building or a portion of a building.
Now, let me tell you why I asked you that question. As a long time ago, in refresher courses that we take to be certified instructors, it's as though the world of license to carry is its own bubble. Let's say, for example, you can buy a gun outside the law of having a license to carry, but in certain parameters, they look at you a little bit closer and they say, if you have this, that, or the other, you can't buy a gun. Or if you can't do this, you can't get a license. And I wanted to make sure that the premises in the license to carry segments of our penal codes is just a general statement that is used anywhere else. Do you understand my question, and is it accurate?
Well, I think when you say anywhere else, our penal code is several volumes long. And I don't know it by heart. The answer would be, you know, again, wherever there's a code, they're going to define what premises means. And it does change. I think maybe that's the answer.
Okay. So
the definition of premises may be different when it comes to the agricultural code than it may be for a right to carry.
I totally understand you. And I guess I'm answering my own question. Since we're talking license to carry, those premises would pertain to what you read in 46035.
And it seems pretty clear to me, Matt, you know, there are other laws that allow you to carry a gun on your premises. And by that, see, I'm broadening it already to the backyard. If somebody's trying to steal some of your stuff, for instance, you know, that might allow you to go out and protect your property.
That's a whole other ball of wax, yeah.
It is.
Okay. Let's go to this part of Penal Code 4602. What would give someone control of a premise if the premise didn't actually belong to them? What would enable that person to prove they had command other than them saying so?
Well, that's one where we have Penal Code Section 9.43, and it's just what I mentioned a minute ago about protection of a third person's property. If you have a reasonable belief, and, you know, again, that reasonable belief would be that question of fact I was talking about, that you have a responsibility to protect someone else's property or land, or if that other person requested you to do that, or if you are protecting property of, say, your spouse, parent, or child, and they reside with you or they are under your care, then you have the right to protect that property. Now, again, that's one of those questions of what is reasonable belief. And some of the evidence is certainly if you have a written request to protect property, if you and your neighbor have been good buddies and your neighbor comes in and says, oh, yeah, I wanted him to do that, I asked him to do that, you know, that's good evidence. But, you know, it's still...
So if I come onto a property...
What a jury says.
If I come onto a property, I'm wearing my open carry. I'm wearing open carry today, we'll say. And I go onto somebody's property and some Joe Blow is standing there, says, hey, I'm in control of this property, I want you off. I would just... A reasonable person would say, well, I don't want to cause any more problems. A smart move would be just go? Or, I mean, anybody could be saying that to you.
Well, yeah, they could be. But, I mean, I guess it really depends on the circumstances of why you need to be there. I mean, if there's another coffee shop down the road, I think I'd just back out and go to the next coffee shop.
True. Now, I want to make something very clear, ladies and gentlemen. I ask these questions in the way I do because I'm playing devil's advocate. So I'm well aware in most cases it's not worth it. Just go to the next coffee shop, okay? But we're doing this for discussion, to clarify, smooth out, make more clear what the law is saying here.
Yeah, so the reasonable belief, again, pops back in mind. I mean, if I don't know anything about this property, don't know who the owners are, and somebody stands up and says, I'm the owner, you know, I got to be reasonable, and I got to believe that he's not just lying to me. But if I know a whole lot more about the property, then maybe I could question him, and I don't have to reasonably believe that he's got the authority.
Hey, I know John Smith. He's owned this property for 30 years. I've been around here all the time. I don't know you, basically, is what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, let's go on to another one. This one is big with me. It's all big with me, but let's talk on or about your person, and let me explain why. To open carry with a license, the handgun must be in a hip or shoulder holster. If the gun is in one of those but placed on the passenger seat, would that be legal? Let me explain why I would do that sometimes. If I'm driving in my little sports car and I got my bucket seats and I'm packing my 1911 and it's flaring out towards my backside and it's hitting the side panel of the seat, I'm thinking, you know, it's a little uncomfortable, but because it is in the hip holster, I'm a detaching it from my belt, in arm's reach, putting it in the passenger seat. It's my vehicle. I'm in control. I got a license in the hip holster, and it's about my person. Can you talk to me on that?
Sure. When I was in fifth grade here at Cameron Elementary School, my teacher, Miss Bad, asked me to do a little science project. She asked everyone in the class to do one. So I read it, and it said that I needed to soak the shell in vinegar and then starch it. So after I had soaked it in vinegar, I pulled out my can of starch, and Ms. Bat pointed out to me what I had read really was scratch. So what we've done is we scratched the surface of this rule that says what it says, what you just read, that should not be open, and it says unless, see, it's an exception. Unless the person is licensed to carry that gun and, in other words, is joined by the and you talked about a while ago, and the handgun is carried in a shoulder or belt holster. Now, I didn't see anything that gives me a definition of exactly what a shoulder or belt holster means, but I would suggest that if a police officer sees it in the seat next to you, it is no longer a belt holster or a shoulder holster. It becomes a seat holster. And he could arrest you for that. So all you have to do to be careful and be reasonable is just, like, throw your jacket over it. In other words, cover it so that it's not out and in plain view.
Okay, I need to argue a little bit on this one because I'm still not understanding. In Penal Code 4602, it says on or about. So then why do they even put the on, why do they put the about part in it? It just causes confusion.
No, not really. Now, see, again, you know, go back to scratching the surface. What you're talking about is the offense. The offense is if you recklessly carry it on or about. It's not talking about how if it's on or about and you have a license and it's not in your shoulder or a belt holster. Now, you know, again, if I were representing someone in a situation in front of a jury under that scenario, I would argue, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, it was in a shoulder holster, even though it was laying in the seat next to him.
But as a prosecutor,
I would be arguing otherwise.
So it's a gateway to trouble.
A gateway to trouble is a good way of putting it. Absolutely.
So, ladies and gentlemen.
But you know, Matt, you got to be thinking, we talk about our rights. You know, the police officer has rights too. And they have a right to feel safe and comfortable. I mean, again, they're putting their life on the line and they're out every day dealing with these sorts of things. So if they feel threatened or if they feel a concern about a situation, you know, you need to listen and respect that.
I have no argument with that at all.
And what this law has been in place for a long time, and there was a case the U.S. Supreme Court did long, long time ago called the Schimmel case. And they called that the Schimmel Circle. And it has to do with where the weapon is in a car so that a person could access it and cause concern for someone who's making a traffic stop.
Okay.
So if it's sitting in the seat next to you, that would be within your reach. So that's why there would be some illegal questions.
But if you're a licensed carry holder, it's, and you say have it on your person, then it's even closer to your reach.
Well, it's not on your person insofar as it being carried in a shoulder or holster belt.
Okay. This is a perfect illustration and example of what I say, and that is, even though you may think you're right, you may be wrong. It's just one of those things. So now that you're aware of what a situation can come up or happen, or a prosecutor might want to go after you, and a defense attorney may say, no, that's not right, let's try to avoid that situation altogether. So, Rick, the bottom line would be is if you're going to take it off because you got bucket seats, put a towel over it or a jacket over it.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes reasonable sense because you don't want to just leave it. If you were to stop to go out and get some coffee at the CEFCO, you know, you don't want your gun just sitting there.
Well, of course not. It'd be on my hip at that time. Okay, let's move on. That was a good debate. I like that. Is there a limit in distance to being in direct route to your vehicle? If a person doesn't have a license to carry, they can carry directly en route to their vehicle. It could be 10 feet or 1 mile. Is that correct?
That's true.
That's
and,
pretty simple.
You know, again, we're talking about something that's reasonable and a question of fact. So, say, for instance, I went out and had a bit too much to drink one night, and I decided to leave my car at the local bar and walk home, I think I would have a right to walk back to that car the next morning with my carried pistol.
Okay, that seems pretty cut and dry. Okay, very good.
Even if it were 10 miles.
10 miles, okay.
But a jury may disagree with me, see?
There we go again. Ladies and gentlemen, be good and don't get in trouble. If a person is in control of a vehicle, what would be the clarification of control? He can own it, or he could be borrowing it. Just this is silly talk almost because it's so obvious. But I want to break down and clarify. It's almost like reading the Bible. You read every word. You say, "What does that mean? Where did that come from? How does it? What's the true meaning?" That's what I want to do. Break it down so I understand it totally, and then when I go out there on the street, I can make common sense decisions.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And control of a vehicle, that question has popped up many times, particularly under DWI laws. And what is evidence of control? Again, that's a question of fact, whether you're in control of the car. I mean, just because you own it don't mean you're in control of it. There could be someone else driving the car.
Good point.
I have seen situations before where people were arrested for DWI who literally were passed out, who had pulled off on the side of the road, but they had the keys in the ignition. And the prosecutor made a good argument that they still had control of the car, even though they didn't have control of their mental facilities.
So what's the moral of that story? Don't drink and drive?
The control question comes up so many times under the DWI laws because those laws are much older than the license to carry laws. And, of course, it's a situation where there are a lot of appeals. So I was just giving you that example of a question of fact that a jury might look at and determine based on the evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen, I like this conversation a lot. I'll tell you why. I'm very aggressive. I'm very aggressive to learn, to know, to handle things in a proper way. And sometimes with that, you can get too fine edge. And Attorney Rick Dodd here is polishing and making smooth my sharp edges. So that's good. I like that. It's a good conversation.
I mean, well, you know, a while ago you talk about control of premises, you know, you specifically about the car. There's a couple of cases that talk about that a little bit. One of them has to do with a fellow who reasonably believed that he was protecting his girlfriend's car when, in fact, her car was being repossessed. So,
oh, wow, that's an interesting twist, huh?
Yeah, so he, you know, pulls out his pistol and sticks it in the guy's chin, and he, you know, the guy backs away. Well, he gets charged with some sort of aggravated assault, and the court, being the judge, didn't allow an instruction that talks about the control and whether you have a right to protect someone else and the reasonable belief, because the court said, oh, well, we don't believe your story. The appellate court said, well, no, we're going to reverse that and remove the guilty verdict, and we're going to say that the court did reversible error, and we don't really care whether or not the evidence of the defense was strong, feeble, impeachable, contradicted, or even if the court had the opinion that it was not entitled to any belief at all, that instruction should be given to the jury as to whether or not he had a reasonable belief that he had a right to do what he did.
There's so many angles and twists and things. It just pays to study your law, be common sense type of people. Don't look for any trouble. If it comes to you, make sure you know how to maintain yourself and handle yourself in the situation. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do this every week, and I think this is going to be fantastic. Rick, can you, in closing, give us some final parting words?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, you got to be thinking about the police officer and his rights and his duties and respect those. Even if you believe him to be wrong, you still have to respect the badge.
That's
because
right.
That badge has a lot of power and control. And I firmly believe that most police officers, the vast majority of police officers, are out there trying to do a great job for us. Sometimes they have a bad day. Sometimes they make mistakes. Generally, those bad days and mistakes are escalated by the person's behavior that they're dealing with. So if you don't escalate your behavior, they won't escalate theirs.
And for all of you students who've taken my class, you know I promote that big time. When you're in a traffic stop, he's a professional, and professionals sometimes have a bad day. So when he comes up, if he's a little gruff or she's a little gruff, be respectful and do and comply and get out of the traffic stop as easy and as soon as you can. So with that, Rick, it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. I can't wait for the next time. And
yes,
ladies
sir.
And gentlemen, if you got any questions, feel free to give us a call, 254-697-6633. We're running long, so we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll come on back, and we'll be talking about things that are coming up in the month of March. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com.
Hey Siri, I just got engaged.
That is very exciting, Cassie. What would you like for me to do next?
Oh gosh, there's so much. I've got to find a dress, flowers, cake, food, a photographer, a venue, bridesmaids I have to call, and...
Here is what I have found. Everything you are looking for is in one place. The Hilton Garden Inn Temple is presenting their 13th annual bridal show on Sunday, March 26th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. You'll meet with wedding vendors from photography, bakeries, salons, venues, florists, and lots of others who are ready to help you plan your special day.
Siri, you are the best.
Actually, there's more. Every vendor will be giving away a door prize valued at $50, and the Hilton Garden Inn will be giving away a grand prize of a newlywed date night package for a year.
Sunday, March 26th at the Hilton Garden Inn in Temple from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. For more information, call 254-899-3908.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Second hour just about to begin here. We're going to read to you some things that are going on real fast, and then we're going to have back on the air the voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon, kicking butt and taking names. He's a good guy, got a plethora of information. But before we get to him, a lot of stuff going on this month, so let me tell you about what's happening. First off, we have an advanced M4 class going on as I speak. I've got the rest of the crew down at the shop in the range. They're still doing training while I do the show. It's a great time. If you have interest in learning to advance your skills with the AR rifle, the M4 platform, go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, sign up or get a group of five or more, and we'll do a class for you and then get it to the advanced level. That's happening today. Now, on March 10th, the second Friday of the month, like every second Friday of the month, is our round robin pistol competition. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a lot of fun. It's great training, too. You get to shoot under time restraints, accuracy restraints, and shoot guns that may not be familiar to you, so it's a lot of good training. So for $20 entry fee, you get to compete, shoot all night, and possibly win a great prize. Check it out at aaronsgunshop.com for details, and watch some videos on my YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop. Now, March 11th, Saturday at 2 p.m. is my next license to carry class. There's still room available, so go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the LTC page, sign up there. The instruction is great. and the price is right. It's only $60. And if you want to do a refresher course, I'll only charge you $40. March 17th is ladies' night. All range time for ladies that night is free. Guys, treat your ladies to a night at the range. It's free. March 24th is our second annual law enforcement benefit shoot-off. Last year it was the Cameron Police Department. They won the event and got to keep the trophy at their department for the whole year. Now, who's gonna beat them this time? And you don't have to be law enforcement to compete. Just get a five-person team together and enter to support your law enforcement agency of choice. Now, you've heard about the bridal show, the commercials I've been playing. I will be at that bridal show at the Hilton Garden Inn on the 26th. That's going to be Sunday from 1 to 4. I'll have my whole entire bar set up there. You need to come check it out. So if anybody's having a birthday, wedding, corporate event, or anything, a social event, whatever, come check it out. You're going to see it's a pretty nice setup. We'll tell you all about it, give you details, so on and so forth. If I have time, I'll talk about it later in the show. If not, we'll talk about it next week. So those are the things that are going on. A lot of things happen in Aaron's Gun Shop. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Do me a favor, please, everybody right now, go to and like me on Facebook. Let's get those numbers up there. Show you're listening. Give us a call, 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I am proud and honored and happy to present to you the voice of law enforcement, Officer Randy Dixon.
Good morning, everyone. Time to be back in the saddle again and back on the air. Good to see y'all, hear y'all, and think about you again. A lot of changes have happened in the last couple of months around here, and it's time to just get back to normal, everyday police work for the city, the county, the state. And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about some things that are not real pleasant to talk about. As a matter of fact, I am doing some research for the future endeavors. I have come across quite a bit of statistics that are quite alarming to me. You know, we have a good community around here. We have a good community in and around this whole entire state. But there are some things that have been really coming out in the news recently that have really basically bothered me. Some things that have bothered a lot of people. And it has to do with kids and the sexual abuse of kids. And that's kind of what I want to touch on today. And I know that it may be taking a different degree or different ideas about how we look at things. But, you know, children, they're our future. They're the ones that are the most helpless of society, and we have to take care of them. So what we're going to do today, folks, is we're going to talk a little bit about sexual abuse of children and how we can help if we know about it, if we have our neighbors, what we can do. First off, any kid can be sexually abused. It could happen to boys or girls. It could happen to big kids or little kids, either one, no matter how young or old they are. It doesn't make any difference how weak or strong or even what their economic, social capacity is. It is estimated that 1 in 5 kids is sexually abused. There's not a week that goes by that somewhere we read in the paper, hear on the news about a child that has been abused. And a lot we hear about today is especially using the internet for such. This is one of the hardest parts of any law enforcement agency, no matter where it is, knowing that what happens and what you can do to make that and make it go away and to help people. You know, who abuses kids? You know, when we think about that, who abuses kids? And one of the things that we really talk about is the fact that when the kid is abused, we feel sorry for them, we feel sorry for their future, but we have to get in and we have to do something. We have to take part. Most adults care about kids and never sexually abuse them. But some people have serious problems and think it's okay to be a sexual deviant with a child. Sometimes a sexual abuser is a stranger, but usually, more than not, the sexual abuser would be someone that the child knows. It might be a parent, a step-parent, a stranger, even a friend or a neighbor, or a friend even. But it might be anyone. It might be someone in your family or someone that you like a lot. It doesn't make any difference. It's a hidden crime. Why would someone do this, you'd ask yourself? Well, someone who sexually abuses a child has an issue, and they have problems, and they do need help. A lot of people say we know what kind of help they need, but you know, that's not part of our society. We do things the right way. People can do bad things. Even nice people do bad things sometimes. It is sometimes hard to believe that someone we love or who is nice to us usually can abuse us. I know that I've heard kids ask before, Is it my fault if this happens to me? And the question, the resounding answer is, no, it's not your fault. It never is your fault. It's never, ever the child's fault. Some kids blame themselves, but they shouldn't. Adults sometimes use tricks like telling them that they are bad, that this is what happened to them. You know, we can't, as human beings and as society, we can't take the time and we can't allow children to believe this. You know, the thing that we have to do in our society is we have to understand that there are a number of bad things that happen to people, but it shouldn't ever be bad things that happen to kids. You know, I don't know about you, but when you're watching television and you see the ads that come on for St. Jude's Children's Hospital or for the starving kids for UNICEF, it tugs at your heartstrings, just like it does when the ads come on about the SPCA and the dogs that are abused or the animals that are abused. Things like that hit our innermost feelings and our innermost ideas. But children are the most helpless forms in our society. We as adults have to take care of them. Maybe sometimes we think about things and we think about what we could do to help that. One of the things that we should tell kids, and whether it's your children, or it's your neighbor children, if you have any indication, it should never be kept inside. It should never be kept as a secret. Because what happens is they become adults, and those ideas, those thoughts come out, and it's an unending cycle. It's a chain event, and we want to stop that chain event, just like abuse or alcoholism or any other event that can be passed on from generation to generation. The one thing we always need to assure the child is that it's never their fault. We ask ourselves, how can sexual assault be stopped? The best way to stop sexual abuse is to talk about it. Sexual abuse is against the law. It should never be kept a secret. Even if the abuse only happens once or seems like it's over, it's important to report this to someone. This person who abused will probably try to do the same thing to other boys and girls. There are many people who can help the victims and help the abuser. If someone with knowledge of such actions would just take the time to report this unthinkable act. One of the things we hear many times from kids is that, what if I'm afraid to tell? People who touch children in inappropriate ways may tell children that something bad will happen to them if they ever tell anyone. Maybe someone told the child that they would be hurt if they were told, or maybe they threatened their family. Another common ploy many abusers will tell their victims is that someone you love won't love you anymore if you tell your secret or our little secret. Kids have been told so many things, and they've been scared to the point that many times they're not going to relate the heartache that they have. If the abuser is a family member, a child may be afraid the family will break up if the secret is told. No matter what, it is important to reassure your child or any child that you have contact with, they should report anything such as this to a person they trust with what happened. Children often wonder, will anyone believe me? And let me tell you, from my experience in the past 43 years, yes, children usually tell the truth when it comes to this matter. A child needs to hear that there are many adults who will believe them and who will help them. Some adults may not want to believe that their child could have been abused. From personal experiences, I can tell you right now that when your child comes to you and tells you that they have been abused in some way, you as an adult need to take action. You need to believe your child. Children often want to know what will happen to the abuser if I tell. Let your child know that the abuser will get help. And, you know, whether it's legal help or medical help, the bottom line is when we've got people, a predator out here in society, they need some kind of help, no matter what that help is. Let your child know once again that they will get help. A person who sexually abuses children needs help. Most abusers can get counseling. If the abuser is someone in your family, you may see less of him or her for a while. You also may have less respect or basically not warm around you. And I can understand that. But here, some examples are that the following stories give examples of some of the different kinds of sexual abuse. All of these could be kids living right here in our area, in the Temple, Belton, Cameron, Killeen area. Denise was 11. Her uncle started accidentally touching her every chance he got. Later on, he would go into her bedroom and reach under the sheets and touch her. Denise pretended to be asleep. Hector, and all these names, by the way, are fictitious. Hector was 10 and loved playing soccer. His coach gave him a lot of attention and would give him rides after practice. The coach told Hector that there was a special game they could play. The game was fun, except for the fat part where the coach had Hector hold and touch his private parts. Hector wanted to stop, but the coach said if he did, then he wouldn't get to play soccer anymore. Tyrone was 14. A 25-year-old friend of his sister wanted to take Tyrone's picture. Tyrone thought it would be fun because it was a hot day. The photographer asked Tyrone to take off his shirt. Then she told Tyrone to take off his pants, like he was in a like in the underwear commercial many times we see on television. Things like this go on and on every day. A child needs to tell a trusted adult when these things happen. Hopefully none of that ever happens in this area, but folks, in reality, we know that this area is no different than any other area, just on a smaller scale. Kids need to understand that we as adults, we're going to believe them. You know, as I said, the names I just gave you are all fictitious, but the reality of these actions happens every day in this country. Sexual abuse, child abuse, and crimes against children are the most horrific type of crimes that we deal with in law enforcement. Everyone here in the USA needs to work together to stop these horrific crimes from happening. It is always better to err on the side of caution than to do nothing. So here's what I'm asking y'all to do today, folks. If you have a child that you believe that has been a victim of sexual abuse, or if you have a child, a neighbor child, or someone who believes that there is something wrong, and you as adults are most certainly smart enough to understand the reasoning behind this, but if you ever have things such as this come up to you, you need to report it as a duty. As a human being, you need to report it to either your local law enforcement agency, wherever that may be, or call the Child Protective Services. There is a 1-800 number that anybody can call. They can report, and I know what people are saying. I don't want to get someone in trouble. It could be just my beliefs or my wrong beliefs. Well, folks, there is no wrong belief. You know, if you have a concern over a child, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, or whatever, take the time to report it to somebody. A child is the most vulnerable part of our society, as I said earlier, but we need to understand that children need our help as adults. You know, whether you're a preacher, whether you're a grocery store worker, whether you're a construction worker, it doesn't make any difference. All of us have knowledge. All of us can see things. And if you see those things, you need to report it to the right authorities that at least someone can check it out. Help your conscience to be free by doing something. And that's the most important thing. So it's great to be back with all of y'all again. I look forward to the future. I look forward to us having a lot of good topics and discussions. And if y'all will take care and have a great week, and we will see y'all next week.
That was the voice of law enforcement. I'll tell you what, Trey, let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to do our gun training demo. And we got a special guest in here from the shop, Lori Green. She's going to tell us a few things about what she's learned. And we'll be talking with her and discussing about when does size really matter when it comes to a handgun. So we'll be back on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Today, again, is March 4th, 2017. It's Saturday, and we still got the chief in the... We still got Officer Dixon here in the studio, and you can give him a call at 697-6633 if you have a question. You can give us a call if you have a question. All negative comments go to Trey. I only take the good stuff. All right, now, for our next segment here, we have a gun training demo. Does size really matter? Well, it does when it comes to your hands holding on to a handgun. Easy out there. There are three things at play when we talk about this. Now, I have here in studio Lori Green. She is learning so much and advancing so fast, it's incredible. She comes to the range. We're going to talk to her in just a second. But she's come out to the range there. She loves the place. We're going to talk to her, ask her why and all that. And this topic pertains to her specifically. That's why I've got her on, because she was having this challenge that we're about to talk about. And when we analyzed it and discussed it, we figured out what was best for her. And now she's going to be just knocking it out of the park. But anyway, Does size really matter? There are three things at play when we talk about this. When selecting a handgun, the size of your hands, the size of your gun, and the type of action your handgun has. Now, let me explain it in order, then put it all together for you. Let's start with the number one there and do a self-analysis of our hands. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands up, palms facing you. Do you have a catcher's mitt for a palm? Or do you have a really small area of a palm? I've got Lori here next to me, and I've got my baseball mitt hand up to hers, and she's got like a little, I don't know, earring bag size palm. Okay. It's really small. I've got long fingers, and based on the size of her palm, she has a proportionate length fingers, so I would say they're short fingers based on the size of her palm. Me, I have big palm, long fingers. Now, why is that so important? Because it all depends on how you can grasp or hold on to a handgun. So look at your hands. Do you have large palms, long fingers, small palms, long fingers, big palms, short fingers? It becomes very important to know these things when selecting a handgun. As I read on and finish it up, we'll explain why. Now let's talk about the different size of handguns, small, medium, and large, single stack, double stack. Look, you got the small compact guns, you've got the mid-size guns, and then you got the large guns. And they all fit certain situations, but you got to understand what they're good for and what they're not good for. So we need to understand that. I'll show a video in a minute, and if it's not up, you'll be able to find it on YouTube probably by Tuesday next week. But you got long barrels, short barrels, high capacity, minimal capacity. And then you got the actions of a handgun, the mechanical workings of the firing mechanism, single action, double action only. Now, once we know and understand all three, we can then pick the handgun that is best suited for us. And I don't ever want to hear again that because you're a woman, you need a revolver. Whoever says that to you, ladies, stay far away from them. Their intentions may be good, but good intentions can get you in a pickle. Let's learn it right and make the correct choice. Now, on the video, I'm going to try and describe it to you via verbal, but also show it to you on this video. The size of the handgun and how the hands come into play. But first, let me bring on Lori Green. Lori, how you doing? I'm so glad you're able to come on the show today.
Thank you. I'm doing well.
You a little nervous?
Of course.
Lori, you said you were nervous when you're shooting and you're tearing up the target. I think you're a pool shark and you're just playing a game here.
I was nervous.
Okay. Well, Lori, let me ask you something. How did you get to know about our shop in the first place?
Russell McLaren is a brother-in-law of a coworker.
And Russell's a good man. That's a good man right there. And he's just so willing to help people. So he brought you under his wing and he brings you to the shop. And when you come to the shop, what are you thinking when you're coming to the shop? Tell this to a lot of ladies, because a lot of ladies may be apprehensive to coming to a man's gun shop.
Oh, it's a wonderful shop. It's great to be out there. Everybody is friendly and camaraderie, and I kind of enjoy it.
Well, that's good. We were glad you enjoy it. I mean, we've got the indoor range there. We've got the classroom. We've got the store area, the whole works. And it's just a nice little setup. It's not, ladies and gentlemen, Aaron's gun shop is not clinical. You're not going to see people in lab coats saying, your 60 minutes are over. You need to pay another $15 per hour. I'm like, you know, come on. It's good to see you. Give me 10 bucks and shoot for the night. Okay, just that's how we do it over there. And it's a lot of fun. You get to shoot everybody's guns. You can go up to somebody and say, hey, man, I like that gun. Can I shoot it? And they go, yeah, sure, man. Here, go ahead and feed it and shoot some rounds downrange. Isn't that what you got?
Yes, everybody's friendly. I've shot people I didn't even know their names. They let me shoot their guns.
Okay, you shot people you didn't know their names?
No, I shot people's guns that I didn't know their names.
Okay. All right, now, Lori, since we're on this topic about the size, I'm going to go back and forth here with what we're talking about. Russell lets you use his 1911. And let me tell you something, everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, almost everybody can shoot a 1911 well. It's just a beautiful firearm. If my AR instructor's listening, yes, we love 1911s. We have a little challenge going with that. But anyway, you're shooting this 45 caliber Colt 1911 5-inch stainless steel gun. It's a beautiful gun, and you're tearing it up, aren't you?
I'm tearing it up. It's beautiful.
Now, let me ask you, how tall are you?
5'1".
Okay, and you're kind of petite.
Yes.
And you got small hands and short fingers.
Yes.
How's that work for you when you shoot the gun, standing still, shooting on a piece of paper? Pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah.
Do you think you can pack that heat conveniently and effectively and be able to use it on the street if, God forbid, if something ever happened?
No.
Probably not. So this section works for you perfectly because what I'm talking about fits the conversation that we had. Now, ladies and gentlemen, she was shooting that 1911, and I outright said to her, look, what's the purpose of the gun? Are you here just to shoot for fun, or is it for self-defense? Bottom line is, she took the class, the license to carry class. How'd you like that class, by the way?
I love the class. It was great.
A lot of dramatic examples of what to do and what not to do, right?
Yes, it was.
It kind of sticks in your head.
Yes. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, take a class, March 11th, Saturday at 2 o'clock. We got a class. So anyway, we're looking at your hands, and we're saying, look, if you're going to carry this gun and being as petite as you are and the kind of clothes that you wear and what the purpose is of it, we need to reduce the gun. And we got it down to a Glock 42, which is a 380 pistol. Fits in your hand perfectly. It's flat, it's skinny, it's convenient for you. It works great for you, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, we were teaching you also how to point shoot. Where you just look at the target, the gun's in your hand properly. Remember the drill we did?
Yes. Well,
tell me about the drill we did.
You lock and load. You look at the X, raise your gun and fire.
That's right. What she's doing is she's looking at the threat. The gun is properly in her hands. The gun comes up into her line of sight and she shoots. She doesn't take all day to aim and try to get the perfect shot. Because let me give you a hint, everybody. When you're in a dire situation and your life's on the line, you ain't got the time to aim. That's why I hate sights. In a tactical situation where you're close range, 15 feet or less, sights are a hindrance, in my opinion, okay? The gun I shoot the fastest and the best with is the gun with no sights because I'm not taking the time to focus on the sight. The gun's in my hand properly. I aim at the target and I shoot with both eyes open. Job done. All right, I'm going to bounce all over here. Now, in the video, let me show you different size guns and different actions. I've got this little RG piece of junk. People say it's a piece of junk. I think it shoots pretty good for being a $50 gun. But it's a double action revolver. I can either cock the hammer and pull the trigger or just pull the trigger. And that's showing the type of action. You got to grab the gun and have a long finger to grab the trigger to be able to pull it and shoot the gun. So if you got a small mitt and you're carrying a snub-nosed revolver and you got to put your palm around that big grip and reach that finger out to grab the trigger, the gun might have a tendency to start being pulled crooked in your hand so that you can reach it. If you're looking in the video, when you go to look at it on YouTube, you'll see the gun should be straight in your hand, not crooked in your hand. So if your hand's small but you got to reach, that's what's going to happen with the gun. Now, a single action self-cocking mechanism like a 1911, what's nice about that is it's a skinny grip. It's got a very short trigger pull on its action. So if a person has a small palm, they can wrap around it, reach the trigger of the gun, and pull it with minimal effort. Keeps the gun straight in the hand. Now, a single action only, like the old cowboy pistol, different action. It's a big gun. So, you know, a lot of people can shoot it, but this particular action, you got to cock the hammer and then pull the trigger. That's the only way it's going to fire. So you got to take all these things into consideration. I'm throwing a lot of different angles in this topic at the moment, and that is size of your palms, length of your fingers, types of actions on a gun, how big is the gun, what's your body size, what's your purpose of the gun. If you got a gun for self-defense at the home, that's all you've got, then you can carry a big gun. If you got a gun and you're a petite young lady like Lori is here and she's carrying a 1911, I'm sorry, you ain't going to hide it too well. And ladies, I don't want your guns in your purses. Figure out a different way. The purse is detachable from your body. Once they take your purse, then what? What are you going to do? Find a gun that fits you. Like Lori here, she's petite. The Glock 380, I'm not saying that's the perfect gun for everybody. For her, it works out great. It's flat, small, it's effective, and it works every time you pull the trigger. It works great. So for her, it works well. You cannot see it if she's wearing more form-fitting clothing. It's much easier to hide it than a 5-inch 1911. It's just not going to happen, okay? So keep that in mind. Now, we teach all this stuff at our shop, aaronsgunshop.com. Go there, check it out. We've got all sorts of classes. We've got classes for co-eds. We've got classes for ladies only. We've got classes for M4 like we're doing today. We've got an advanced class. We've got class for shotgun. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out the High Cap Adventure page. Okay, Lori, when we were talking at the shop, you would shoot and you'd have certain results. And you did good. You did good. But would you not agree that what you learned would be, if we had to use an association, let's look at a sidewalk. You got a nice slab of concrete, another slab of concrete, and then we got the wooden divider, the crack, and then we got more slabs of concrete. Would you not agree that you have learned slabs of information, general information. Would you not agree?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. Now, when you and I got together, And I said, that's great. You're hitting the paper. You're generally in the zone. Okay. Now we're going to talk the crack. We're going to talk about all that information's in the crack. The little fine tune here. How long's your finger? How big's your palm? What size gun do you want? What kind of action do you want? All these little fine tuning things. And when we did that and we got all that information, scraped it out of the crack and applied it to your situation, did that not help you, make you feel better, improve your shooting? Things of that nature?
Yes, yes. Just being able to, of how to hold it and working on holding it and with the fingers and that big heavy gun.
That's right, because if you're going to carry a gun, you got to know it's the tricks that you know. It's the icing on the cake. What is there anything you could tell women out there that may want to start shooting? Anything you could say out there to motivate them to come on out, to break down the walls of hesitation or anything?
Oh, I think every woman ought to go and take the class and shoot the guns, and just for self-confidence and feeling safe.
Do you feel that knowledge of the firearm that you would carry is somewhat of an equalizer for you? What I mean by that is if you've got somebody who's over a large size, bearing down on you, and you're feeling intimidated by the size, and you're fear for your life. That's an equalizer.
Definitely.
So definitely. It behooves you to master your weapon, understand it, and pick the one that's best for you.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and the more you work with it, the more comfortable. Because I was very uncomfortable, very nervous, and the more I go out there, shoot, talk with you, you show me some more things. Every time I go, I learn something more. But you get more comfortable with it, and it's going to help you in the long run.
That's right. Practicing with your handgun constantly. Did you do your trigger exercise like I told you?
Not yet.
Okay, well, will you do that today? All right. Trigger exercise. You want to dry fire that trigger, let your finger learn how that trigger breaks. So this way, when you go to shoot, your brain doesn't have to think about it. The finger already knows. Well, there's all these things, ladies and gentlemen. I can go on in this particular topic, but time is limiting me here. So if you want to get further information, if you want to be an advanced shooter, if you want to really know what you're doing, if you want to have a good time, if you want to enjoy people's company, if you just want to not go to the operating room of a clinical type of store and you want to come to a place where you can sit back, you know, put your hat on the rack, kick your feet up, enjoy, have a cracker or two or some kind of food that we're having down there. We have food there a lot. Come on down, check it out. Aaron's Gun Shop in Cameron. Go to aaronsgunshop.com for all the details, or give me an email or give me a call. Get the number off the website. Laurie, anything you want to say in finality here?
No, I just appreciate everything you're helping me with.
Well, I'm glad you're there. We enjoy you coming to the shop. It's a great time. It's always great to see somebody constantly advancing in their skills. So, Laurie, thank you very much for coming on. Trey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have a product spotlight from ANC Firearms. And then we're going to have David Leon, our special interview, to go over bullet casting and things like that. See you on the other side. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, I'm back in the saddle and I'm enjoying every bit of it. The number here is 254-697-6633. Give us a call. Tell us what you're thinking. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Like us on Facebook. Pump up the numbers, please. Give some positive comment. You can call in with some ideas, concept ideas of what you want to hear. Make some notes on Facebook. We'll answer you back, and we'll have a good time. So like us on Facebook. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to talk about my sponsor, ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. Orange Kutz is the owner. This guy's awesome. Very nice gentleman. Been in business for a long time there. He's in the old bank on the corner of in Heidenhammer there. I don't even know the roads, but the highways bypass Heidenhammer. So you take the exit off, go down there to the intersection, and it's a yellow brick building. It used to be an old bank, and it's pretty cool. It's got the half plaster on the wall, the bricks showing, the wooden floors. It's just pretty cool. And they have guns, ammo, knives, black powder, reloading supplies. The staff is great. Clint, Dennis, Mike, check them out. Go there and check them out. What we're going to be talking about today is some of the guns that he has. There's the High Point pistol. And I'm reading to you from an article. I'm going to take bits and pieces out of it from the shootingtimes.com. And it's talking about High Point pistols, basic, but oh, so reliable. And I'll be honest with you, ladies and gentlemen. This is by Paul Scarlatta. I'll be honest with you. You know, I know what I'm doing. And so when I look at a High Point, I go, oh, whatever, you know, I don't know. But in reality, some people can't afford an expensive gun. And I totally dig that. I've been there before. I'm not there at the moment, but I've been there before, so I can relate to that. And so when you have to buy these guns, I'm always telling people, buy the best gun you can buy that your money can buy. Well, if your money is $200 or less, you're going to have to buy the best you can. Well, after reading this article and realizing some of the things that goes into this and understanding how it works and the reliability and the accuracy, I'm kind of thinking like, you know, hey, let's check this gun out. So I'm going to read to you an article about the High Point 45 AC pistol. ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer's got it. Give them a call, 254-983-4417. Tell them to hold yours and go in there and buy it today. So here we go. This is from Paul Scarlatta. High Point pistols, basic but oh so reliable. After putting 45 ACP, and this guy had gotten two guns from the High Point company. After putting 45 ACP and 40 Smith & Wesson High Point pistols through a thorough shooting test, the author says you can call the High Point pistols inexpensive, but don't ever say they aren't good shooters. Here in North Carolina, we have an old expression. It looks like it fell out of an ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down. With this pearl of wisdom in mind, I don't believe that anyone will hazard the opinion that the pistols to be discussed in this article are actually pretty. But then again, they weren't designed to be lookers. For the last decade or so, High Point Firearms has been offering blowback-operated pistols and carbines chambered in .380, 9mm Parabellum, 40 Smith & Wesson, and 45 ACP. In an effort to enlighten information-hungry Shooters Times readers, editor Joel Hutchcroft supplied me with two of High Point's most popular pistols, the 40 and the 45 ACP. Now, after the parcel delivery service truck had left, I opened the two packages I had received, and my first thought was, well, they certainly are different looking. In fact, I would say they were two of the strangest-looking pistols I've beheld in quite some time. It was obvious that in the case of the High Point pistol, form follows function. The first thing I noticed was the massive slab-sided slide with its black powder coat finish and rather large ejection port on the right side. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is me talking. Pay attention to that because later in the article, it makes a comment to that, which was one of my problems with the gun because of lack of knowledge. So it's going to be clearer and you'll understand why I have a different outlook on it. Now, these are die-cast from aluminum zinc alloy with steel inserts reinforcing the entire breech area and other stress points. Actually, it's coming up right now. When I asked Charlie Brown of High Point Firearms about this method of construction, he said blowback firearms are simple and inexpensive to make and will handle a wide spectrum of ammo without problems. Now, here's the deal about the slide. In the area of Ohio where we are located, there are many shops that specialize in die casting for the auto industry. We utilize this resource. Ooh-ah. The High Point polymer frame features an integral trigger guard and an accessory rail for mounting an optional laser sight. The barrel is mounted permanently to the frame, while the recoil spring is located in a groove beneath the barrel where a downward extension of the slide bears upon it during recoil. Separate grip panels are held in place by screws and tabs on their bottom edges that enter cutouts in the frame. Great sights and excellent triggers. The two features I found commendable were the sights and trigger pulls. Both pistols come standard with a blade front sight integral with a full-length rib on top of the slide and a rear sight that is adjustable for windage and elevation. For those who favor such sighting equipment, High Point offers an optional ghost ring rear sight, which is pretty cool, by the way. The standard sights utilize a three-dot sight system for a fast acquisition, but instead of the usual white dots, those on the High Point are day glow orange in color. Now, I don't know about you folks, but I've grown older, and I found that the sights with brightly colored dots or inserts are most helpful towards my hitting the target. The three-day glow dots sorts of jumps out of you and grabs your optical attention, even in dim light. Now, for the triggers, as I mentioned earlier, the High Point pistol is fitted with a single-action trigger. According to my gunsmith's trigger pull scale, the required weight to let off was just under 4 pounds, which is pretty good. And those on both pistols have small amounts of take-up and broke very crisply. One would not be out of place calling their trigger pulls impressive. Despite their, shall I say, odd appearance, the High Point pistols proved to be well-balanced with ergonomically friendly grips. In fact, when practicing presentations with an unloaded pistol, I found it possessed natural pointing qualities, whether gripped two-handed or unsupported. And I'll back that up, because I put my hands on it, and it does. It just fits right in your hand. The sample pistols were both 6.3 inches in height and 1.34 inches in width. They are covered by a High Point's lifetime warranty. Surprising, reliable, and exceptionally affordable. I have little doubt that some readers are already expressing doubts about High Point pistols being based solely upon their appearance and price. And while this is understandable, it cannot be condoned. Many years ago, I read a two-part pro-con article about the so-called Saturday Night Special controversy. While the author of the con article condemned inexpensive handguns as the weapons of choice for criminals, the pro-side author made a succinct point that he said, "Your Saturday Night Special is someone else's heirloom, or perhaps more important, the only handgun that you can afford." And I'll back that up by saying, master what you got. Brown told me the reasons they brought out High Point firearms was to give the average working person a well-made gun made in the USA that was affordable. So many gun makers have priced themselves out of reach of the average person's pocketbook, he said. We see and talk to customers every day that use our guns for hunting, self-defense, truck, boat, or camp guns. Now let's be honest, you don't need to spend a fortune on a handgun for protecting your home. A firearm used for defensive purposes should have several characteristics. It must be safe and completely reliable in operation. It should fire a cartridge powerful enough for the job at hand, and it should provide sufficient accuracy at the distances at which it is likely to be used. If it does that, it doesn't matter if it costs $100 or $1,000. But this should in no way be construed as an excuse for not practicing with the said handgun. Anyone who owns a firearm for whatever reason should make a point of practicing it with a regular basis to become familiar with its operation, learn and practice safe handling procedures, and hone their shooting skills. It was then time to see how the High Point handled the series of offhand drills. The vast majority of rounds I sent down range found their way to high-scoring rings of the respective targets. In fact, close examination of the targets showed that only two rounds were outside the X or 10 ring with each pistol. Now, you can say that High Point pistols are inexpensive, but don't ever say they don't shoot well. They shoot darn well. The first thing that must be mentioned in my summation is that even though they were fed a steady diet of jacketed hollow points and semi-wad cutter ammunition with bullets of widely varying weights, both pistols proved 100% reliable from the first shot to the last. That's right, there was not a single failure to feed, fire, or eject of the 200 rounds fired through each gun. Considering the operation system, felt recoil was very soft, which enhanced controllability and the ability to make fast follow-up shots. A plus for those of you who reload is that the spent cases were only ejected about 3 feet to the right of the shooter. Additionally, the orange dots on the front of the rear sights made the target acquisition fast and positive. Now, in final paragraphs. I have to admit that their massive slides made me feel a bit odd in my hand, especially under rapid fire, but it should be remembered that the circumstances under which these pistols are likely to see service, this should not be a problem. I was suitably impressed with the reliability, accuracy, and handling qualities displayed by both pistols. I think it would be fair to say that if you're in the market for an affordable handgun that is capable of firing authoritative cartridges for home defense or informal plinking, a High Point pistol may just fill the bill. Now, ladies and gentlemen, ANC Firearms and Hide and Hammer's got them. They're under $200. Go buy one now if your pocketbook is tight. Trey, and their number is 254-983-4417. Call them now. Say, hey, I heard them on a High Cap Adventure Radio program. Hold five of them for me. I'm coming in now to get them. So, all right, we're going to take a quick one-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to have David Lee with us talking about bullets. See you on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. We're going to finish up our last 10 to 12 minutes here with a good friend of mine, David Lee, the owner of Southern Cast Bullets. And, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it, and really good choice of music. I like that.
All right, I'm a rock and roller deep in heart. So, David, I asked you on because, you know, you come out to the shop all the time, and I've come to know you, and I see what you produce, and you cast bullets. And there's a lot of reloaders out there. They're always looking for, you know, components to get their ammunition. So I wanted to get you on, talk about what you do,
and maybe ask some just a few questions of generality to people out there who might be beginning, or if somebody's out, if you're reloaders out there and you want to give us a call, 254-697-6633. And like I said before, ANC Firearms has components as well. I mentioned that in the ad too. But David Lee here, mostly you're casting bullets.
Yes.
Primarily what you're doing. Tell us about that, David. Tell us about yourself, how you got into it, and what's going on.
I got started about 40 years ago simply because I didn't want to spend the amount of money that they were asking for a box of ammo.
Yeah.
So
especially when we had that big ammo crisis.
Right. Well, that was long before then. But I found some molds and I found some lead, and I started making my first 44 bullets, which were wrong, but that's another story. And then people started asking me if I'd make them some bullets, and then they wanted something else. So there goes another mold, and there comes another mold. And the next thing you know, 40 years later, I've got close to 40 different molds now.
I've seen your operation in the sense of when you're at shows, you've got bullets for
everything,
lots of everything.
Up to 30 caliber.
Okay, and my initial question's got to be this. Why powder coating? What's the deal with powder coating?
I don't actually powder coat. I found it to be, a lot of people do it, and they say it works good for them. It didn't work good for me. When I size, they have a tendency to spring back, and when they spring back, that extra coating makes the bullet that much bigger. I didn't care for that.
But the purpose of it was what? Just like
just to keep. Well, they said that you're going to powder coat the bullet to keep it from letting the butt barrel. Well, I make my lead hard enough, up to 1,400 feet per second, it doesn't lead the barrel.
Okay, now I heard you discussing this before, ladies and gentlemen. Just so you know, I'm going to be going all over the place here, but I heard you discussing before you can guarantee certain densities of lead. Can you explain that? Do
right.
you want to explain that?
My lead is the way I buy it. It's already tested. It comes out at 92% lead, 6% antimony, and 2% tin.
And for all you reloaders out there, you know what he's talking about.
Yeah, this is the way I buy my lead. I don't buy wheel weights. I don't buy plumber's lead. I don't buy junk off the street. My stuff comes certified. Everything I make for you guys is dead on the money. Plus, when I make it, I throw a little extra linotype in on top of it, which makes it actually harder.
Mm-hmm. What about if you were to go to a range and pick up all the lead that's been shot? Wouldn't that be good lead too?
Yeah, it is, but some of the bullets that are jacketed bullets have a lead core to them. Those lead cores are pure lead. There's nothing added to them. So now instead of, like my lead is a 14 to 18% hardness, you might get one that's maybe 10 or 12.
Is that what gives a difference in pricing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well, tell us about you. Tell us how people can find out more about reloading if they want to begin, or maybe you got advanced people out there who need components from you. Why don't you tell us what you're doing, how to get in touch with you, what you've got available. Let the people know what's going on.
Well, I make a little bit of everything. If right now I've got a web page, but it's so antiquated, I need to get it updated. If you needed to get in touch with me...
Well, it's simple. It's because you're too busy making bullets.
Yeah. Well, I don't do the web page. It's sad. The people who do the web page for me haven't changed it in 5 years.
I think we can fix that.
I hope so.
Okay.
But you can contact me at southerncastbullet@gmail.com. And it's just bullet, no bullets. The other one I lost the password for, so.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to link your website to our website.
Okay.
And this way, if people can't remember it, if they're just familiar with the website here, they can go to the radio page and check out the link, and it'll go directly to your website.
So good deal. Okay? Good deal. Hopefully we'll get it updated. But I make anything from a 380 up to a 500 Smith & Wesson Magnum. If I don't have something that you want, if you guarantee me an order of 1,000 pieces, I'll have the mold made.
And I've seen his stuff, everybody. It's consistent. It looks great. It's presented in a professional form.
Yes.
What other components besides the bullet itself? Do you do any other components? Primers?
I sell some brass. I leave the primers and powder to the bigger guys that they buy cases at a time, where I would be buying one or two bottles at a time. I like trying to sell just the bullets. I do end up with extra brass. Sometimes I sell that. I don't like to save brass. I don't know what to tell you on that one, but
you don't like to sell it?
No, actually, I don't like to save it. Save it just gets in the way.
Okay.
My shop, I've got a 12 by 16 foot shop for casting, and it's packed.
Do you sell lead
bulk
ingots?
No.
What do you call them? What do you call them?
Lead ingots.
Do you, like, if somebody said, look, you know, I love you and all that kind of stuff, you've got some source with just great lead, I want to just buy the lead and do it myself?
They can do it themselves. They can
but
buy
you, but you won't sell the bar itself?
I'd rather not.
Rather not, okay.
Because at some point I'm going to run myself out of lead, then I have to go right back to Roto Metals, and sure, they deliver for free, so anybody can get the same thing I'm getting.
Yeah, but there comes a point when, like, I could do a lot of stuff myself for the cheap, for free, or whatever, but there's sometimes, you know, I want the expert. I want somebody who knows what they're doing. I can do it, but then it's just like, I can fix the corner of my roof that's got damaged from the windstorm. I could do it. It's going to look ugly, but it's going to work. Or I can say, you know, sometimes you just got to get it done right.
I've offered a million times to 100,000 different people that if they want me to come help them, I'm available. I'm retired now. I've got nothing but time on my hands. If you want me to come by, help you get started on reloading, if you have a problem with what you're doing, if you're not sure about the sizing, give me an email. Call me. I'm more than happy to help you out. I started out. Nobody helped me. You know, I'd learn from books. Books. Get the books. That's the best thing I can tell you. Learn.
How long have you been doing this now?
40 years.
Easy. Ladies and gentlemen, 40 years. The guy, and I've seen the end result. The guy knows what he's doing. Let me ask you this. You hear this all the time. You need to start reloading. You shoot a lot. You need to reload. Well, I shoot certain calibers. I shoot two different calibers 90% of the time, 45 and 9mm. Okay? And to me, is my busy life, it's easier for me, instead of spending all this money on equipment, to just buy a box at the moment. But there's other people out there who do more shooting than I do, and it becomes financially beneficial to them to reload. Can you give an example to people what it might, what might be a good idea to get started, how to get started, what kind of equipment to get, and when you think the amount of shooting balances out for the expenditure of the equipment?
Hey, it's real easy to start. Start low end. And I hate to say this, the Lee reloading equipment, it's not really low end, it's a lower price piece of equipment where you can start with it and then add to it later. They give you all the components you need to get started. And you're not looking at that much money. And it's funny you mentioned that people say they don't have the time to do this and they don't know if it's worth the expenditure to buy the equipment. These are the same people that have $1,000 worth of golf clubs in their closet. They play once a month and put them back in the closet. Why not rent the golf clubs? You know, I mean, if you own a gun, you should be out shooting. If you're out shooting, you need ammo. If you need ammo, you need to reload.
I can.
And you need my bullets.
I can feel the pain on some people because it's like, my schedule's crazy. I mean, I do a gun shop, I do training, I do radio, I do all sorts of bartending. I'm maxed out.
Right.
So it's like, I had a discussion with somebody else. The people who know why hire the people who know how.
Yep.
And if you're blessed to have the finances to hire the person who knows how, great. If you're challenged financially and then you're forced to do it, then you learn how to do it yourself.
Right.
You know? I do things on my own, and there's other things I just don't got the time to do. I got to find somebody who's an expert like yourself to.
Yeah, you're beyond busy. I mean, I can understand you having to buy a box of ammo.
You see me at the shop, man. I'm all over the place.
Right. Like a.
It's crazy. Okay. What would you get out there to somebody? What would you say to people who are either begin reloading or who are experienced reloaders, how that you can come into their life to help them? How do they get in contact with you again? What can you provide for them? You got a minute and 45 seconds. Go.
With 40 years experience, I've seen it all, done it all. I've got all the books. I've got books back to 1951. I've had equipment from the cheapest to the most expensive. If you have any questions at all, if you have any problems, even the experienced guy has problems. I ask everybody questions. You saw that last night. I'm forever asking questions. You can never learn enough.
I always ask questions. People look at me, what now?
Yeah. But you know what? That's the only way you learn is to continued education. Learn something every day.
Give me email, website, phone number.
All right. Website, Southern Cast.
Stand by. Everybody get a pen and paper. Write this down. Go.
SouthernCastBullets.com. The email is SouthernCastBullet@gmail.com. And well, phone number? You got the phone number there. It's new.
254-598-5370. I say again, 254-598-5370. That's for David Lee, and that's for Southern Cast Bullet. Bullets, but the website is Southerncast Bullet.
No, the website is southerncastbullets.com. The email is southerncastbullet@gmail.com.
Well, you need to fix that, make it
easier. Yeah, I need to change one or the other.
All right, well, we'll talk to you about that. You need a good IT guy. I think I know somebody. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back after, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of being off the air. It's been fantastic to be back. Please go to my Facebook page, like me on Facebook, give us some positive comments, let us know what you're thinking, tell us what you might want to hear. This is my show and your show too. Let's make it a great thing every Saturday at 10 o'clock here at the Ranch 105.1 FM. And check out my YouTube channel, Aaron's Gun Shop YouTube channel, and give me emails at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. So until next week, God bless, keep your powder dry.